I've listened to 21 by Adele for months.
And I listened to it once yesterday.
Welcome to Spin It. Hello. That's right. This is Spin It, the record ranking podcast for people who would rather be listening to music. I'm James, and with me is Connor.
Months?
Yeah, I've listened to this album for months.
You hadn't listened to this album until however many months ago?
No, actually, I hadn't.
Wow, that surprises me. It's rare that I come to the podcast having heard an album. It's even rarer when I've discovered that album before you.
Yeah, this one made it onto the playlist in November of 2023. So,
whoa, so really recent.
5-6 months.
Wow.
I know. I mean, I, to be fair, knew a lot of the songs on this album for a lot longer than that.
Well, I mean, how couldn't you?
Yeah, I just didn't fill in the blanks and the deep cuts until that time.
This is a powerhouse of an album in terms of hits.
It really is. The track list reads like a greatest hits album.
Yeah.
It pretty much is an Adele greatest hits album.
I mean, I think the biggest and maybe only hit missing?
Whatever you're about to say is wrong. It's not the only one, but go on.
Well, you're right. I can now think of two. The two biggies that are missing are Skyfall.
That was a biggie.
That was a biggie. And,
Hello? Go Easy on Me?
I guess three. I forgot about Hello as well. Yeah, Easy on Me is the one I was thinking of.
Send My Love to Your New Lover?
But yeah, so those three. Easy on Me, Hello, and Skyfall would be the only three that I would put on a greatest hits album that aren't already on this one.
There's quite a few. But yeah, it's a pretty strong record. Not to spoil the whole episode in the first couple seconds, but I obviously, when I listened to it, I was like, it's got to be an episode. There's no way it couldn't.
Good one.
It sure is. And actually, you know, we almost did an Adele album way, way earlier. Back at the beginning of 2023, her most recent album, 30, was nominated for a Grammy.
That's right.
Yeah, she almost took that one home instead of Harry Styles. I did listen to 30, did not like it as much as 21. I don't know if that's a hot take, but...
What about 25?
I also don't like 25 as much as 21, but I'm less familiar with it overall.
Fair enough. That's the one that has Hello on it, I believe.
It is. So you've been listening to Adele for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. High school, I think.
Wow. You're right. That is super rare. How'd you find Adele?
Well, my dad was super into Adele, actually, so... He's going to love that we're doing this episode.
Of course.
And then my mom also super, you know, just, we were a big Adele fan. Family.
Oh, that's really good. A fan family.
Yeah. We even had like several of her like DVDs, recordings of like concerts or whatever that she put out.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Such big fans. Even our family computer was Adele. We were all in.
No.
Oh.
Now I'm a big fan of Dell's, but my dad's not a big fan of Dell laptops.
He's not a big fan of Dell. He's a big fan of Adele.
We were an HP family.
Got it.
I've come around on Dell's.
Yeah, and apparently you've come around on Adele too.
Yeah,
there was no around to come.
Yeah.
So you know Adele. You know a lot of songs on this album. What do you know about Adele?
What don't I know?
Yeah, but see, this time I feel like you do know a little bit. It's just, whatever. You know the drill. Adele also has a last name. Her name is Adele Adkins. She was born in May of 1988 in London, England, over across the pond. She was largely raised by her mother, and she loved singing from the early, early age of 4.
Full name's actually Adele Lori Blue Adkins, MBE.
Yeah, okay, so you do know a thing or two. That's true, that is her full name. Didn't feel like two middle names and a nobility title were necessarily in order.
She's also known for her mezzo-soprano vocals and sentimental songwriting.
She is, yeah.
She's English.
I did say that.
Did you say that?
Well, yeah, I guess I more implied it by saying that she was born in London, England, so you could infer from that she's English.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, she's singing by age 4, and she loves listening to people's voices. She's just a sponge, you know, absorbing what she hears people do and practicing it, trying it out for herself. And I think that really is great for her to help understand her own vocal capabilities and limits and like what she's able to do as a singer from like so early on. She also learned to play the guitar, which is really interesting to me because so much of her music is pretty piano driven. You won't find too many guitar heavy Adele songs. In 2006, at the age of 18, she graduated from the Brit School for Performing Arts and Technology. And she actually said she got a lot out of her formal education. She was planning to go into the business side of music, artist management, administrative stuff, like that side, instead of performing. But when she was in school, she actually had to take some classes as a performer, and that really helped develop her significantly as a singer. She really got the technique down and figured it all out. Meanwhile, she had kind of informally made a little demo for one of her classes, kind of a school project, but a friend of hers put it out into the world on a Space for Friends, which some of you may know as MySpace. See our Lainey Wilson episode for more information. And just like Lainey Wilson, Adele started to get some MySpace attention. Soon enough, she gets a call from the music director of XL Recordings, Richard Russell. By September, she would be signed and set up with a manager, like barely out of school. That's incredible. Adele's debut album, 19, named after her age, of course, came out when she was 19, in 2008. And it's no surprise that it skyrocketed her career right off the bat, right out of the gate. It's full of hits like Chasing Pavements, Daydreamer, Hometown Glory, and her now very famous cover of Bob Dylan's To Make You Feel My Love. I'm sure you know that one.
Yeah.
How many versions of that one do you know? You know the Billy Joel version?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the Bob Dylan version?
No.
Wow.
Wow.
You don't even know the original.
To me, they're all originals.
Well, that's categorically untrue, but okay. They're original in my heart. Adele also made her TV debut and started to earn nominations and awards like the Mercury Prize, an Urban Music Award, and a lot more. She got a Grammy for Best New Artist, plus a Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, and a couple other nominations. She also started touring internationally right off the bat, although she suffered what she's called an early life crisis, where she ended up actually canceling a lot of her tour dates abroad to spend time with her boyfriend at the time, a thing that she would not do today, but she did then.
She has actually called herself selfish because of that. She regrets that, actually.
Yeah.
So she, you know, was selfish and didn't appreciate what she had and shirked her responsibilities.
Yeah. Which, you know, it is an early life crisis. It is very early in her life. And there's a certain level of, like, of that that comes with it. I don't know, naivete, immaturity, whatever you want to call it. I feel like I don't blame her for doing it. But wow.
She blames herself.
Yeah. In late 2008, Adele was a musical guest on Saturday Night Live, and her episode actually brought the show the very best ratings it had seen in 14 years, which is a wild stat. Billboard actually kind of called it outright when they said after her first album, Adele truly has the potential to become among the most respected and inspiring international artists of her generation. I mean, huge praise for a debut. Either way, 19 was a huge success. Within 2 years, it had sold 2.2 million copies worldwide. And essentially, I mean, she comes barreling into her second album, riding the biggest wave of success you could possibly imagine, practically a teenager, and the expectations for her sophomore release are through the roof. Everybody's so excited and anticipating whatever Adele's second album's gonna be. And to be honest, I think she even still knocked all those expectations out of the park with 21. Now, as for the name, 21, she did put a little bit more thought and meaning behind it than just her age, even though it is also just her age. The working title for the record was actually Rolling in the Deep, but that just didn't feel right to her. She said, 21 is different from 19. It's about the same things, but in a different light. I deal with things differently now. I'm more patient, more forgiving, and more aware of my own flaws. Something that comes with age, I think. So fittingly, this record is called 21. Like a photo album, you see my progression and change throughout the years. I tried to think of other album titles, but I couldn't come up with anything that represented the album properly. And of course, despite trying not to, she has indeed continued that pattern to this day.
I like that pattern, though.
I think it's unique.
I think it's a unique pattern, and it's, I think, cooler than just picking a song title.
It is, especially through this lens of like a photo album and watching her progress and mature and develop.
Yeah.
Both as a performer, like instrumentally and sonically, but also lyrically. It's cool. And it's also interesting as the listener, you know, sometimes we miss a lot of that context just to pick up an album. And I mean, obviously, as a podcast, we try and re-inject that context into the album by telling you when they made it and the circumstances around it and stuff. But like, if you just put on an album, like last week, you know, you just put on the All-American Rejects or whatever, you don't necessarily know who's making it and what kind of part of their life they're at or like where, anything like that. A title like 21, you got it, you know? Like, oh, she's 21 right now.
Yeah, well, certain albums, you don't really need that context. It smacks you in the face.
Yeah.
Olivia Rodrigo.
Well, true. That's true. Sometimes it is very apparent. But yeah, I just think it's cool. Well, Adele had been working on 21 since mid-2009, and recording continued into October of 2010. She put a lot of time and thought into it, and a couple different elements came into play for the album's composition. First of all, she wanted to change musical directions a little bit from her first record. People described her first record as brooding. And while she was in the U.S., she started to pick up all these influences from country and Western music a little bit, something that's definitely a little harder to find in England. And she aspired towards something a little more upbeat and snappy with 21, something people wouldn't say is brooding. So, we end up with this kind of R&B pop soul fusion record that can give you a hug in one breath and kind of punch you in the teeth in the next. I love it. It's such a wide range of influences. Second, another unexpected major contributor to the concept and to the thematic content of the record was her relationship. The same relationship for which she'd suffered that early life crisis suddenly led to a second kind of early life crisis as she went through a breakup. She started writing the album while they were still together, but after they split, her writing became a lot more about heartbreak and all the feelings associated with it. Actually, the very day after the breakup, she went into the studio and just had to cathartically, like, let it all out. She said, "We'd had a fuming argument the night before. I'd been bubbling." That's the British coming through. She said, "Then I went into the studio and I screamed." That song became one of her biggest hits, Rolling in the Deep.
Yeah.
Cathartically screamed out the night after a serious breakup. 21 finally came out in January of 2011 to even bigger success than 19 did. It topped the charts in 30 countries and was the best-selling record of the year worldwide, both in 2011 and 2012. It remains, actually, the best-selling record of the 21st century in the UK, and one of the top four there all time, which is just a remarkable. I'm going to tell you a lot of hard-to-believe statistics about 21.
Yeah?
Yeah, bear with me. 21 topped the UK charts for 23 weeks, breaking the record for the longest stay there by a solo female artist. In the US, it's the best performing Billboard 200 album of all time. It was in the number one position for 24 weeks, making it the longest for any album since 1985, and also the longest by a female solo artist in history. To date, it's sold more than 10 million copies in the US, so 21 has been certified diamond. That's a lot. Worldwide sales have passed 31 million copies. Three of the album's singles were international number one hits. And in 2011, it won the Album of the Year Grammy and the Brit Award for British Album of the Year. Rolling Stone included it on their 500 Greatest Albums of All Time list as only one of 36 albums from the entire decade of the 2010s. And she was also the second female artist after Beyoncé to win 6 Grammys in 1 year, which is so wild. We didn't even see anyone win 6 Grammys this year.
That's a lot.
One person won 4. Everyone else had 3 or less. I know, 21 was a big winner. People really loved the vintage aesthetic and what they call old school production on 21. And, you know, I agree. It's kind of got this certain nostalgic charm kind of to it. She worked with Jim Avis, her producer, for her first record and this one, but she also connected with other well-known names like Ryan Tedder and the iconic Rick Rubin. But at the end of the day, she and Rick Rubin didn't exactly get along. He pushed her and her musicians really, really hard, and she called the experience daunting. In the end, 5 songs with Rubin's work on them made it into the record. Don't You Remember, He Won't Go, I'll Be Waiting, One and Only, and I Found a Boy, which was a regional release. For the rest of the record, she went back to previous versions that Rick Rubin didn't work on, when the heartbreak was more fresh, you know? After a very, very heavy dose of promotion, including a ton of online marketing, still kind of novel in 2011, I think, and another big, big international tour, I would say that that's pretty much what established Adele, set her in stone as an international superstar.
Sure.
Pitchfork said that 21 was one of history's great resilient breakup albums, and that it made Adele into pop royalty, which I've got to agree. I feel like this was a big turning point, a big turning table for Adele. Well, after 21, the rest of Adele's career to this point has been also stellar. Like you mentioned, you know, she then got to compose Skyfall, one of the iconic James Bond theme songs.
How much do you know about that?
How much do I know about it? Not much. I've never seen a James Bond movie.
Really?
None of them, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have heard the song, and I do know that it earned her a Golden Globe, one more Grammy, and an Academy Award.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but other than that, I don't know much.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the only James Bond song to win Best Original Song. It was the first one to even be nominated for it since 1981's For Your Eyes Only. Uh-huh. And the first one to win it.
Interesting.
And she almost didn't do it.
Almost didn't make it? Really? Why not?
She didn't think it was her kind of thing. She wrote personal songs, she felt. And so trying to write something for a movie didn't necessarily feel right to her.
Well, she crushed it.
But then after reading the script, she realized it was a no-brainer.
No-brainer? That's a far cry from doing nothing.
Because she fell in love with the script.
Wow. Yeah, I think it speaks to how good and popular the song was based on the fact that I know it.
Yeah.
Well, after Skyfall, Adele decided to take a few years and, quote, live a little bit, as she said, which was good for her. You know, she was able to have some time away and devote a lot of thought to her writing, just like she did for her first two albums. She was able to kind of reflect. And sure enough, in 2015, her third album, 25, got all those other huge hits out there, like Hello, Send My Love to Your New Lover, All I Ask, Water Under the Bridge. She called it a makeup album to kind of counter her breakup album. She said 25 is making up for lost time, making up for everything I ever did and never did. 25 is about getting to know who I've become without realizing. It also broke a ton of records worldwide, and she actually thought it was going to be the last age-titled album. She said it was kind of the conclusion to a trilogy about her life and about growing up through the early 20s, but...
So much for that.
Yeah, I know.
She realized... when she turned 30, that she'd grown up even more.
Well, she did realize that she'd grown up even more at 30, but she didn't release 30 until she was 33 in 2021.
But that's when, like, she started working on it, right?
Yeah, the age thing was starting to slip a little bit. But, yeah, it's when she did most of the work for it, and...
Because, like, I think she was already, like, 20 when 19 came out or whatever, but like because she did most of the work, that's why she named it 19.
Right. It's more emblematic. The songwriting is more emblematic of that time in her life.
Yeah.
Especially 30. 30 feels like a good milestone to move on from the albums in the 20s.
Well, better to move on at 30 than from your 20s than at like 50 from your 20s.
That's true. Ooh, wonder what Adele's 50s gonna be like. We're gonna have to wait a couple decades to find out.
That's when we'll get the greatest hits album and it'll just be this entire album again.
It'll be 21-2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
That's 42.
Well, it can't be 42, it'll be 50. Anyway, yeah, 30 was nominated for the Grammy this past year. Up for album, well, not this past year, the year past this past year. You get it. 2 years ago. In 2023. And so I did listen to that one once or twice. I never did properly put it through the Albums of the Month gauntlet and rank and score it. But I am a little familiar with it. She ended up with 7 Grammy nominations that year. And Easy on Me won the Best Pop Solo Performance. As for the rest of Adele's accolades and awards, not necessarily for 21, oh boy, it's a lot. In addition to Grammys and Oscars, she does have one Emmy for her 2022 TV special, so she's very close to an EGOT, and maybe even closer to a CGOT, after she wins a Spinnet Award today, maybe. But maybe she doesn't. I don't know.
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
We'll have to wait till the end of the episode and find out.
We only have one.
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber is our only other CGOT.
Man, she'd be joining a prestigious club.
She would, but she also has to win a Tony first, because until then, she's just a CGO, even if we give her a Spinnet Award.
But then that gives her something to strive for.
Yeah, sure.
Make sure you get your Tony so that you can...
Or should we be the ones to give her something to strive for by not giving her a Spinnet Award and making her earn it somehow?
Yeah, but then, like, you're not close. You're not motivated, right?
True.
So, like, if we give her the Spinnet Award...
We're the ones that motivate her to get the Tony.
Exactly, right? Because it's like, oh, now I only need the Tony to join Andrew Lloyd Webber.
To join CGOT?
Yeah.
To be the second ever CGOT artist. I like it.
That's how we get an Adele Tony. She does something Tony worthy because of us.
Yeah, I like it. We'll see at the end of the episode how it ends up.
Yeah, maybe she won't be worthy. Who knows?
Who knows? Adele also currently holds 18 Guinness World Records.
Whoa!
All of her world records are unfortunately for like music and sales records. But wouldn't it be really cool if like she also made the world's largest pizza or could like put the most marshmallows in her mouth or stack cups the fastest, you know?
Marshmallows would be a pretty cool one, the marshmallows one. I could see Adele doing that.
Yeah, maybe that's something else she can strive for. A 19th world record. Anyway, other than that, I'm not even going to talk about any more awards. We've covered a ton of the most significant ones. She's earned 173 of them on 366 nominations with 4 albums. I mean, that's astounding. She's one of the most awarded modern artists around the world. So there's just too many. Also, other fun trivia tidbits. Her major influences obviously include some great vocalists, but they're the Spice Girls, Sinead O'Connor, Ella Fitzgerald, Etta James, Bob Marley, which I thought was interesting, Whitney Houston, Aretha Franklin, Destiny's Child, and a lot more. And she said that one of the defining musical moments of her life, apparently, came from seeing Pink perform when she was in her early teens. And, I mean, so many more. She just loves and consumes music like nobody's business. She is a true music fan. Also, you talked about her mezzo-soprano voice. That's true. Her vocal range is from a B2 to a C6. It's a notably wide range.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, her voice is a main feature of her work as an artist and a singer. Critics have even said her singing is more impressive than her songwriting, which I think is pretty rare. I mean, look at all the artists out there that are better songwriters than singers. Bob Dylan. And Adele is like on the opposite end of that spectrum, but also still writes really good songs. Adele is also one of the richest musicians in the UK. In 2019, Forbes ranked her the 9th highest paid celebrity in the world. And as of 2019, I guess a couple years ago now, her wealth was estimated to be £150 million, or $180 million for all you Americans out there that don't know what pounds are.
America. I got a fun one.
You got a fun what?
Fact about Adele.
Oh, okay. What's your fun fact about Adele?
Trivia tidbit.
Okay, hit me.
She credits U.S. politics with her success.
Really? Am I playing fact or spin early? What's happening?
No. No, specifically that of Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin? Why?
Yeah, because Sarah Palin is the reason that SNL episode had so many viewers. So many people were tuning in because she was rumored to be guest starring on that.
Got it. Rumored to be guest starring?
Yeah. I don't know if it was confirmed. I don't know. She was guest starring. She guest starred.
Rumor has it.
But anyway, she says that, you know, Sarah Palin guest starring on her episode of SNL, bringing in so many people, really helped give a boost to her career.
Well, who knew? Yeah, I didn't really realize that. That is a weird tidbit. As Adele, as one of the most famous and like successful pop stars around the world, that is a really weird place and person to attach your success to.
Credit where credit's due, I guess.
I guess. Well, I'm glad you just told me that and didn't give it to the mixtaper to use against me in Fact or Spin.
If I had something that interesting, imagine what he's bringing.
Oh gosh, I don't want to imagine. In fact, I don't have to. It's time. Let's play some Fact or Spin about Adele.
Rumor has it, rumor has it,
Hey, it's you.
It's me.
Hello, mixtaper.
The mixtaper. And rumor has it, you're ready to play another round of Fact or Spin.
I am ready to play another round of Fact or Spin. I hope I'm ready anyway.
But don't you remember? You already lost.
Gosh, I have been losing lately.
Yeah, you were so mad about your loss, you set fire to the rain.
If only. We could talk about that later. I'm going to take it all this week. The tables are turning.
Well, someone like you has got to be rolling in the deep.
Is that a fact or was that another joke?
That was another joke.
Okay, I'm just...
You always win. You always win these song titled offs we do. You always get the last one. I was trying to figure out how to keep it going.
He's trying to keep it going. Audience, he won't go.
Someday you'll lose. And until then, I'll be waiting.
I think we got them all. I mean, except for Love Song. And I don't think I have a way to shoehorn Love Song in here. Good job.
Yes, I win. I'm the winner.
You forced it a little bit.
Yeah, I did. Well, let's hope that this round of Adler Spin goes like that and that I force a win.
You could force whatever you want, I guess. You have all the power in this game.
Up first. Ooh, all 4 of these have fun titles. I don't know which order to start in. And it's been a while since I've made you pick your own fate. One through four.
One.
She was inspired by Louis Armstrong, or so she thought.
Inspired by Louis Armstrong, I mean, I get. Like I said, she consumes music. He's a singer. She's a singer. I get it.
Yeah.
But so she thought implies that she was not really inspired by Louis Armstrong, and was instead inspired by someone that she thought was Louis Armstrong.
Well, I guess you could argue she was still inspired by Louis Armstrong, but...
Okay, but it sounds like in an indirect way.
Yeah. More so, she thought she was being inspired by... the real Louis Armstrong.
Okay, she found a fake Louis Armstrong, an imposter.
That's almost what she found. Yeah, when she was a kid, one of her earliest musical memories was of a Louis Armstrong performance.
A fake.
Now, you might be going, that doesn't make sense. Louis Armstrong shouldn't have been performing when Adele was a kid.
I mean, yeah.
Especially considering Louis Armstrong died July 6th of 1971.
Yeah. I mean, you've already kind of implied that it was a fake Louis Armstrong.
Yeah, but she thought it was the real Louis Armstrong.
Did little kid her think it was the real Louis Armstrong? Or does adult her look back and think, I can't believe I got to see Louis Armstrong. And then did she realize?
No, obviously, adult her has since figured it out.
Right.
Well, I'm not here like breaking the glass to Adele going, hey, guess what, Adele? It wasn't really Louis Armstrong. He was dead, you idiot.
Like, I'm sure she knows by now. I'm just saying... it could be a thing where she thought it really was him until she was older and said it at a weird time and everyone went,
older, but not like an adult.
Okay. Well, who was it then? Just an impersonator?
Yeah, it was a Louis Armstrong impersonator called Byron Stripling.
Really?
Yes.
Can I permission to Google him real quick?
No.
I just need to see if it's who I just need to see his face.
No. No, hold on. No Googling. No Googling.
I'm not looking him up. I'm not looking him up, but the reason...
I'm afraid you're going to, like, accidentally spoil something if you Google it.
Is this the Byron Stripling that was in the Louis Armstrong biopic?
I can confirm that for you. One second.
And he plays the trumpet. I have seen this man...
Did you just Google it?
No, I've seen...
Did you just Google it?
No, I've seen this man perform.
Really?
Just after our Gershwin episode released, I went to see the symphony play Gershwin songs, and he was the guest conductor, and he played trumpet on a couple of songs. I've seen this man.
Really? That's insane.
Yeah. And
you and Adele both saw the same man.
Apparently. Yeah, he was great. He's got a great voice. He plays the trumpet incredibly... Yes, and did do the biopic of Louis Armstrong.
Yeah. How dare you Google?
I didn't Google. I haven't looked it up.
Okay, well, then how do you know?
I know that because I Googled him when I saw him in the show because he was so good.
Fair enough.
And it hasn't been that long.
What a small world.
I know, right?
What a crazy thing.
Yeah, so when did she see him? What was the context here?
When she was a kid, I mean, yeah, her mother took her to see a, like, Louis Armstrong tribute show. She, being a kid, didn't realize it wasn't actually Louis Armstrong.
Right. Is there more to this fact?
No, just that she thought she was inspired by Louis Armstrong, but it really wasn't Louis Armstrong.
She thought it was really him, and it really wasn't him.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, he's a very good impersonator. He got the job to be Louis Armstrong. I think this is true. What are the... odds. I mean, you named a guy that I know impersonates Louis Armstrong, so...
That's nuts.
I know. I feel like it's an Otis Elevators all over again. Of course, that doesn't mean it's true.
You know about Elevators, Winnie the Pooh, and apparently Louis Armstrong impersonators.
Yeah, I guess so, but that doesn't make it true.
It doesn't.
That just means that you found a real Louis Armstrong impersonator to use for this fact, but...
So are you locking in true or fact or spin?
Yeah, I'm going to lock in fact. Maybe I'm in my own way with this one because he was so good, but I was so impressed with him. I think it's a fact. I like him.
This is... a spin!
I got God. She was just inspired by the real Louis Armstrong singing, wasn't she? Just like not in person, you know?
No, she wasn't inspired by him at all.
Okay, you just made this up?
I just made it up.
You just made it up and found a well-known guy.
Yeah, no, I've Googled Louis Armstrong impersonators and found this guy who first popped up. I don't even know if he's really an impersonator or if he just like does Louis Armstrong music. I don't know if he really counts as an impersonator. But, yeah, when you type in Louis Armstrong impersonator, the very first thing that pops up is his website.
Yeah, I think if you play someone in a movie about them, you probably qualify as an impersonator.
Fair enough.
Wow, that is wild.
Man. Yeah, I was honestly, because he's like so popular and like active now, I was afraid you would know a little bit about him. But I was hoping for exactly what happened, was that if you did know about him, it would lend credence to my spin.
Well, I don't know if it led credence to your spin so much as there was really no reason to disbelieve it.
I don't give you reason to disbelieve any of my spins.
Sometimes. But I do think I got in my own way on that one. I stopped caring about the rest of it when I realized I knew the guy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Byron.
Well, 2, 3, or 4?
3.
She made James Bond cry.
Nice. This is gonna go so bad for me. Remember when I said, you don't remember, I told Connor this, I haven't seen any James Bond movies.
Correct.
Now, Skyfall, is that like a Daniel Craig James Bond?
Sure is.
Now, does he listen to Skyfall?
No, it's just a theme song.
Yeah, does he listen to Skyfall, the theme song?
Like in the movie?
No, not diegetically in the movie, like as Daniel Craig.
Oh!
Does he listen to the theme song and cry? Is that what this is?
Yeah.
Are you talking about a different James Bond? Are you talking about a different circumstance?
Yeah.
Does she punch him in the gut so hard that he tears up? Like,
Sorry. I thought you were asking like in the movie.
No, I'm not listening. Does he listen to his own theme song in the movie and cry? That's not what I'm asking.
I just thought maybe you were thinking that like it was like playing on like the radio or whatever in a scene. And
oh, no.
I don't know. I don't know. My brain went places.
Apparently.
But yes, she made Daniel Craig cry.
Okay, by him listening to the song and being moved?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She didn't, like, tell him that she hated his acting.
No, I'm sure he's pretty jaded from that. He's been on the internet.
Do you know the first time I saw Daniel Craig in anything, it was, like, Cowboys versus Aliens?
Really?
Yeah, what a wild movie that was. With, like, Harrison Ford's in it?
Yep.
Yeah, anyway.
It's a weird movie.
I know. That one made me cry, but for different reasons. What did he say about the song? What moved him so?
Just that, you know, she sent it, you know, he got to listen to it, to give notes on it or whatever when she was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he listened to it, it made him cry.
Okay.
It moved him to tears.
I know Daniel Craig plays a lot of manly men characters. Is he a crier? Like, is this normal for him? Is it an exceptional? Like, this is the first time I cried since my dog died and I was 6. Like,
no idea.
Okay. I guess, illustrating my thoughts with a lot of very specific examples in this round. I don't know why.
You are.
I think this could be a fact.
Could be.
You know, Skyfall's a really good song. It's a really popular song. I don't know if I know it well enough to say that it's super sad.
I mean, it's about the sky falling.
Obviously, the guy that's embodying this iconic character probably has...
I've also just now realized that Skyfall also would make a great theme song for a Chicken Little remake.
Yeah.
That has to exist, right? Where somebody's like put that over top of like a Chicken Little scene.
100%. I think James Bond turned on the waterworks for this one. Yeah.
Yeah? You think this is a true fact?
I'm gonna say it's true. You know what's funny is I do remember you trying to lie about James Bond in the past.
Sure I have. Lied about a lot of things in my past.
I know. Well, you lied about Ray Stevens trying to drive the James Bond car, I think.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like me. I repressed that.
Uh-huh. I think it's a fact.
This is a true fact.
A true fact. We're celebrating a man's tears.
Woohoo.
Happy tears, though. Happy tears.
Men can cry. It's manly to cry.
Yeah, he's James Bond. There's not a more manly man in the world. In fact, there's probably not a man that manly in the world either, because he's fictional.
I was going to say Superman, but I realized he's an alien, so he doesn't really count.
He's not a man.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah, Superman is really kind of a silly name. He's just a normal alien. He's neither of the things that his name implies.
2 or 4?
2. Up next...
She almost died at sea.
I knew it. I knew this is exactly where it would come up. Okay, so, contextually, 2 weeks ago, on our episode about SZA, if you listened to the extended B-side version on spinitpod.com, you heard this fact already. The mixtaper said that SZA almost died at sea when she was cast in a shelved remake of Titanic.
Yeah.
Of course, that was not true about SZA. Which I said it wasn't. I called it was a spin. But you said that will return. And I figured, in the back of my head, I thought, I bet it'll come up on Adele. So here it is. On the Adele episode, and it's come up.
Here it is.
Is this the same general idea? Was Adele really cast in a Titanic remake?
Yes.
As an actress, not just like do the voice or the, not just to do a theme song, Celine Dion style.
Yes, she was cast as Rose.
She was Rose. Oh. Old Rose or?
I guess, I don't know. Well, I mean, I assumed Young Rose, but...
So you're doing a lot of facts about movies I haven't properly seen.
Well, whose fault is that?
Well, it's honestly maybe mine. I watched half of Titanic. I watched like 3 hours of Titanic, and then they hit the iceberg, and there were still like 2 hours left in the movie. I was like, I gotta not finish this right now. And I never finished it, because I know how it ends.
I just typed in Titanic remake, and I just got the Titanic 2 Wikipedia page.
They did make a Titanic 2? Oh, gosh.
Well, like the ship that is a planned passenger ship.
Okay, that's different. Yeah, Titanic 2 is one thing.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like the movie. I was like, what's there to talk about? We've resolved every loose end. So tell me more about the movie. Do we know why it got shelved?
Well, there's a lot of problems, I guess, behind the scenes. No scenes were actually filmed.
Yeah.
But
just behind.
In the matter of a couple months, the film went through 3 directors.
Ooh.
All leaving for, you know, creative differences with the executive producers, and
nobody wanted to go down with the ship.
Yeah, apparently. So, you know, eventually they just said, you know what, let's just not.
It's not working. Who else was cast? I guess I didn't even ask that in the SZA version of this question. Who else is in the cast?
So I guess not all the roles were even cast, but
Leonardo DiCaprio coming back.
That would be hilarious.
It would have worked when Adele was doing the 25 album, but at 30, forget it.
Dang.
That's a Leo joke.
Tom Holland was rumored to be a part of the project.
What? That's cool. Now, Spider-Man, that's a superhero with a good name. It tells you exactly what he is.
Martin Freeman was attached to the project.
Ooh, on a Bill Boat?
Somebody named Jonathan Aris. I don't know who that is.
That's Jonathan Aris.
Toby Jones? You'd recognize Toby Jones if you saw him.
Can I Google him?
Toby Jones? I'll let you Google Toby Jones.
Okay. Yes. Toby Jones, Titanic movie co-stars.
No! No!
Oh, I've maybe seen him. I don't know, though. Okay, he's in Captain America. I've seen him.
Yep.
But I don't remember seeing him. He's got a very distinct face.
He's one of the German scientists.
That's right, yeah. I think this one is the fact. I think it's true about Adele. She's already British. The Titanic was a British ship. It's starting to add up.
This is a true fact.
A true fact about Adele?
But not the way I presented it.
How not? Because you presented it this way last time.
Yeah.
That means it was double false last time about SZA. What?
This, I'm just saying, this counts as a spin. This is not the true fact that will return.
What?
That one still exists. But this could have been a true fact had I wanted it to be, in a much less interesting way.
What? Did she really almost die at sea? What? What?
No. She's just a fan of Titanic, and for her 30th birthday, hosted a Titanic-themed party dressed up as the character Rose.
Darn it. You brought it back so soon. You don't usually bring them back, I mean, so close together. It's been 14 days.
Well, you see, here's the thing. I found that Titanic fact and went, ooh, that'll be one of my safety facts. And then I needed to use a safety fact. And then I remembered the SZA thing that would return. I was like, ooh, let's bring it back here, but lie about it so that it's technically true, but also technically false. So that's what I did.
I mean, it was pretty much all false.
The fact that I presented was false, but she...
But she does like Titanic?
Yeah.
Well, dang.
But the Titanic fact, dying at sea, shall still return in a future episode.
That sucked.
Any predictions for the next time it'll show up?
I don't know. I don't want to make any more predictions. This one turned out so bad.
Yeah, that project, all those fan castings, just completely made them up.
Really?
I don't even know if there was a Titanic remake planned.
What? What do you mean? The whole fact is going to return and you don't know if there's a Titanic remake planned?
Well, just not. Oh, did I not? In my notes, I had that it was a 2023 remake.
Oh, well, if you'd said that, I might not have believed it.
Yeah, you always say that when I have other details, but I feel like the bias of you thinking it was going to return here would have blinded you to that.
Maybe, but we'll never know.
But anyway.
Number 4.
She has a strange rivalry with her neighbor.
I mean, what does her neighbor, like, what's that situation look like? I picture Adele living in a sizable house on sizable property where the neighbors maybe can't even, like, see you from how far away your house is. Where does Adele live? Don't dox her, but, like, generally speaking. Send me the coordinates to where Adele is. Like, is her neighbor Barry Manilow sunbathing naked next to the president? I don't know.
Well, I guess this will get, without doxing her, we'll give you a little detail. Her neighbor is Katy Perry.
Katy Perry.
Or I guess I should say was. I don't know if they're still neighbors.
Okay. Like Katy Perry, the Katy Perry who's famous for being Katy Perry?
Yeah.
Whoa. Like Left Shark. What kind of feud does she have with Katy Perry? I guess rivalry is technically the term you used.
Yeah.
Not to...
A gardening rivalry.
They've got competitive gardens.
Yeah. It's a friendly rivalry.
Sure.
They're actually quite good friends.
Really? What, do they live in England or in America? Because they're both from different places.
I don't know. They're both rich enough. They could both have houses in both, for all I know.
That's true. But then the rivalry is probably just pointless if they live somewhere else and just, like, hire gardeners to come in.
No, they were doing this gardening themselves.
Okay.
It was a quarantine hobby.
Oh, fun. You can't talk to your neighbors, so just make flowers at them. Man, the pandemic has given you some really convenient opportunities for lies. What kind of gardening are we talking? Like big plants, little plants, trees, bushes, shrubs, roses, the whole nine yards?
Flower gardens.
More than 9 yards?
Katy Perry said in an interview that her and Adele are neighbors and that they're actually pretty close friends. And, you know, they pop by each other's house. She was telling a story about one time where she had a knock at her door, and when she answered, it was just Adele, and she was, like, in her robe, and Adele just walked in and started talking, and, like, she didn't think anything of it. They just kind of carried on, hung out. But anyway, during the quarantine, you know, everybody was isolating, quarantining, hence the name.
Right.
But anyway, they both got into just gardening in their yards and kind of had a little competitive, like, who can have the best garden sort of rivalry going on.
Okay, who won?
As far as I know, no winner has been declared.
Okay. And what was so strange about it?
Just, I think it's strange to have a gardening rivalry with Katy Perry.
Well, I mean, yeah, only a few people can do that, but a gardening rivalry in general.
I mean, anybody can do it, I guess.
A lot of people have garden rivalries. That's like a common plot of, like, comical, I don't know, like, rich people houses. Oh, the garden is so much better. Did you see how she did? You know, I don't know. I feel like that's a trope.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I think this is a spin.
Thinks it's a spin.
I think there's just too many pieces of this that could be false.
How deep does the spin go?
Great question. I don't think the gardening rivalry is real. And I'm not even sure that they're neighbors.
If this is a spin, and you can correctly guess how deep the lie goes, I'll give you a reward.
Oh, okay. I think that the gardening rivalry is not real.
And if this is a spin, and you're wrong with how deep it goes, you're going to get a mixtaper reward.
So I get a reward either way. Okay.
Yeah, but one of them's a mixtaper reward.
Sure. I think the garden's untrue.
Okay.
I think she's friends with Katy Perry.
Okay. Are they neighbors?
Next door neighbors?
I never said next door.
No, I don't even think they're neighbors, but I do think they may be your friends. So that's where I'm at. I think this is a deep lie.
Thinks it's a deep lie.
Yeah.
This is a true lie. This is a spin.
It's just truly a lie. Okay, a spin.
Did your heart drop a little bit there?
No, actually it didn't. No.
Oh.
How deep, though, does the spin go?
Not very deep, actually. Everything's true except the gardening rivalry.
Oh, man.
They live, quote, very close to each other. The robe story was true.
No, I knew the robe story. That felt true.
Well, then why the heck would you think that they weren't neighbors? If, well, like, would you think Adele's just stopping by while...
in a robe?
Katy Perry's in a robe?
No, I just thought, well, she could be. Yeah, if Katy Perry was the one in the robe, Adele could just walk in anytime. Just while she's in the neighborhood. You know, they both tour a lot.
Yeah, but, like, who just stops by unannounced other than neighbors?
I don't know. Life's not a sitcom. Could be anybody. So I missed the reward.
Yeah, you're getting a mixtaper reward. Sorry, buddy.
Dang.
To anybody that's not a mixtaper, it's probably more of a punishment.
I guess.
Stay tuned for what that is.
I suppose so. I did a fun little thing this week.
Yeah?
You made me pick my fact based on number, and I was like, I'm going to take the first 4 tracks of this album and pick them in the order of my favorite to my least favorite. So that's what I did.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
But weren't those all fun titles?
Yeah, they were. They were all very catchy lead lines.
Okay, well, I've got to go work on your quote-unquote reward.
Yeah, you better. Seems like that was a thing you really planned out in advance.
Totally.
Just have to put the finishing touches on right now.
Yep.
Okay, well, you have fun with that.
Yeah.
He will go. And welcome back to Connor.
The one and only.
That's right. Unimitatable. Let's talk about the album art on 21.
Sure. It's her.
It's Adele. Yeah, that's her.
Black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Green letters for the, or green numbers. White letters.
There's not a single green letter on the cover. Yeah. 21 is green. I like that a lot. Really interesting, subtle color scheme. It's kind of cool. Which, let me ask this, which of the album covers that she's done is your favorite, because they're all very facey.
Yeah, well, we've got Adele 19, which is in full color, but her looking down.
Yeah, and like all up on the nose.
Adele 21, which is her looking down, but like you can see her full face, mm-hmm. but it's black and white. Adele 25, which is like sepia or something. I don't even know.
And she's staring right into your soul.
And then you got 30 back in full color, but now she's looking sideways. She's done with you.
She's moving forward. She's progressing.
Yeah. And then you get Skyfall, which has James Bond, and then like
a single tear rolling down his cheek.
Is that her swirling around him? Hard to tell.
It could be her.
I'm looking at the lips and like the nose, it looks very much like her.
She does have lips and a nose.
Yeah.
But what's your favorite?
There's just something haunting about the staring into the soul of 25.
Going for 25? I actually am going to throw a vote to 21. It's not as unsettling as 25.
Yeah, I guess I'm just intrigued by the unsettling nature of 25. I think 21's probably better. But I'm intrigued by 25.
Okay.
I don't know why we went with green numbers.
Maybe it's because she's still young and like green to the ways of the world.
Evergreen.
Yeah. Or maybe because it looks cool. Maybe green's her favorite color. Hold on. Green is Adele's favorite color. I just Googled it.
Look at that.
So that's probably part of it. Even though her middle name includes the color blue. Maybe it's like an act of rebellion to have green as a favorite color. I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the tracks on 21. Again, really greatest hits level stuff. I'm so excited about every single one of these. It's wild. Up first is Rolling in the Deep, probably her biggest hit of all time. Is that accurate? I don't know. But it can't be far off. I mean, it was Song of the Year and Record of the Year at the Grammys in 2012. So that's huge.
It's such a good vocal rhythm. Like, it's got like a swing to it.
Yeah.
And then when those drums come in, start thumping.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is her little revenge song. It's the self-proclaimed dark, bluesy gospel disco tune. And that's what it is. The syncopation and the thumping and the bluesy, like the just richness of it is the blend of all those things. And this is the one that I said, you know, she came up with pretty abruptly after the breakup happened. This is her cathartic moment in the studio.
I mean, the way she just belts that chorus.
Oh, man. One of the best. That's it. One of the best. She said, I guess it's sort of my musical equivalent of saying things in the heat of the moment and word vomiting. It was my reaction to being told that my life is going to be boring and lonely and rubbish and that I was a weak person if I didn't stay in a relationship. Yes, those are things that her ex actually told her, that her life was going to be boring. She said, yeah, I was very insulted and wrote Rolling in the Deep as sort of an F you. And look who's crying now, by the way. I think she really won this.
I have one nitpick.
Oh, yeah?
I'm finding it. Hang on.
I think this is an album that you kind of can nitpick a little bit because it's so dang good. That's all you got left.
Is there a spot where she takes it up the octave? Where's that at?
I mean, she just goes up at the end of the phrase, but she doesn't sing any higher.
Nope. I could have sworn she takes the word beat up at one point instead of down.
I don't think so.
Maybe that's on the live DVD version or something that I grew up with. Because I swear there's a...
Oh, Mister doesn't listen to live albums because they're different. Nitpicking the live version.
Yeah, I know. I was nitpicking it. I didn't like it. I swear there's a version out there, or maybe it's a different song and I'm cross-contaminating here. But I swear there's a version where she like, I played it to the beat and like goes up and I never liked it.
Never in my life have I heard that. No, it doesn't sound like the kind of thing you'd like. Doesn't sound like the kind of thing that's on this record.
Yeah, I don't know where.
Huh, I don't know. I like how much of this song is just carried by the drums and the bass line of the piano. That's an excellent instrumentation choice. It makes the moments at the end feel even bigger because of how small it kind of is at the beginning. I also love the chorus, the choir in the background. Nice background vocals. Love Rolling in the Deep. Great song.
It's good.
Playlist picks are going to be a beast this time.
Wait, so do you like... I'm trying to remember your factor spin order.
Ah.
You went 1-3-2-4?
I did go 1-3-2-4.
Okay. Not a surprise with number one.
No, not a surprise. Rolling in the Deep is like creme de la creme on this album. Rumor Has It is up next. It is still very good. Don't get me wrong. Just because I ranked it third out of the first four tracks doesn't mean anything. Rumor Has It actually reached number 16, making it her fourth straight top 20 hit in the US. She co-wrote it with Ryan Tedder. And Rumor Has It kind of takes aim at her ex after the breakup. Rumors are flying. It's not even clear who starts them about this guy, but somebody better tell his new woman that she ain't got his love anymore. Some people have even suggested that it's her sabotage job. Maybe she's spreading the rumor herself.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, on the SZA episode, it blew my mind when you figured out that that one song was kind of like Creep. This song also kind of has, if you can believe it, a little bit of Radiohead inspiration, for rumor has it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Ryan Tedder produced the song, and he was inspired by the drop D tuning that Radiohead uses on the song I Might Be Wrong from their record Amnesiac. Probably not a song that you know. I don't have any expectation of that. Actually, I found an interesting story that he told about the day that they came up with the song. Ryan Tedder said Adele walked in. She was really not in a good mood. She was in a foul mood, smoking a cigarette in the studio. Just walked in. I don't know if we're going to do a song today. I'm not in the mood. And I said, what's going on? She said, well, I've talked to my friends. And they're saying, Adele, you've been with this person. You've been with that person. Rumor has it you've done this. Rumor has it you're that. And she kept saying, rumor has it. And I was like, I'm not going to force a song today. But if we do a song today, can it be called Rumor Has It? She paused for a minute and she goes, I kind of like that. And lo and behold, rumor has it. And sometimes, you know, that's all it takes for a song to come about. You just pull it straight out of real life.
I think Adele really utilizes background singers really well.
She does.
Two tracks for two here. The background singers just nailing it.
Which also, I think the background singers are mostly like just Adele. But still very good.
They can't be during, like, live shows.
Well, no, not during live shows. That's true. What's up with you and live versions of all these tracks today?
I've watched Adele live on my TV in a recording.
You thought you were inspired by Adele. Really, it was just an Adele impersonator. Does Rumor Has It get repetitive to you? I kind of think it actually maybe tends to. It's a 3-minute, 43-second song, and it is so focused around that hook. That two-note little riff, and she says rumor has it a couple dozen times. I don't know, it just feels well-worn, if not repetitive, to the point of annoyance by the end of it.
I think I have a little nostalgia blindness.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Because I didn't find it that way, but I think if it was a new song I'd never heard before, knowing me, I probably would have agreed with you.
Good, that's probably what I would have expected to. And actually, as I was preparing for this episode and listening to the song, I was like, I don't think he's gonna like that.
I think repetitivity can sometimes also get a pass if there's a high energy that doesn't get boring.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think I can overlook a repetitive hook or a repetitive musical hook or a repetitive lyric if the energy's got me so hyped up I'm not even focused on that.
Yeah.
And I think this song does that. I'm sitting there like bouncing the entire time that song's playing. Okay. I don't even care.
Yeah. Well, see, remember when I said people called her first album brooding and she was trying to break that mold? This is an instance where she said she wanted something that would surprise everyone. And lo and behold, she did it. Surprised everyone. And it is bouncy and upbeat and snappy.
And then I think the other thing that helps prevent it from getting too, like, right when it would start to get kind of overstaying its welcome, she slows it down there.
To that piano bit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then kicks it back up for the end of the song, which just gets you right back bouncing.
It's true. I love the production on it. Just, there's this echo to it, this reverb, and it feels like it's a nice, spacey, like, style. I don't know. It's wide open. I like it a lot. Critics have said that she's channeling a 40s piano vixen lounge singer, and they said it's a mix of Tin Pan Alley and doo-wop music, which I think is a fair assessment. And actually, it feels like a good progression from Rolling in the Deep to Rumor Has It. I think they go well back-to-back like this. Up next, Holy Smokes, is one of the surprises of this album for me, Turning Tables. Well, to be frank, the whole album was kind of a surprise, but Turning Tables itself was absolutely a mind-blower for me. You know, I'd heard of it. People talked about it. I'd maybe heard some of the chorus out and about in the wild, but I had never really listened to it before, and I put on this album, and it was like goosebumps. This is a mind-blower of a song. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the vocal runs are just incredible. The lyrics are great.
And its construction is so non-conventional.
Yeah.
The time signature, like the way that it seamlessly mm-hmm. flows, but also so jarringly changes at once. I love it. It's great. I don't think it gets enough love, and it's already one of the most popular songs on the album. It needs more love.
It's like in the top five, right?
Well, it is, but it was also...
I'm looking, there's three of them over a million, and then it. So it's number four. It's the fourth most popular.
You mean a billion. Three of them over a billion.
Sorry. Yeah, there's three of them over a billion, and then it comes in at number four with 390 million.
Yeah. It was the album's fifth single, which should give you an idea of how just darn good the rest of this album is if they're like, man, we love this song, but we got to put out four other songs first. Good singles. It's also another song that she co-wrote with Ryan Tedder, just like Rumor Has It. It was certified gold in January of 2012. Did not take long for it to get there. Basically, you know, her ex has been manipulating her and hurting her, and she's had enough. So the tables, as they say, have turned. And also, okay, what do you think of when you think of a turning table?
I go to two places.
Okay, what are your two places?
First place I immediately go to is the Office quote, how the turns table.
Yeah, well, how the turns table, of course.
But then I go to like a turntable. I think of like a, I don't know, like a Lazy Susan.
Like a Lazy Susan. It sounds absolutely ludicrous, but this song was inspired by a Lazy Susan. A literal turning table. A Lazy Susan, right? That thing in the middle of the table that you put your side dishes and condiments on it and you spin it.
Yeah, I got one.
You have a Lazy Susan?
Yeah, it's apple-shaped. I have an apple-themed kitchen.
Okay, I didn't know that. Learning a little more about you every day.
Yeah.
Well, Adele said, I was in London when I wrote this song, but I was thinking of an argument that triggered the downfall of my relationship.
Whoa, a British person in London?
I know.
Wild.
She said we were in New York. Didn't see that one coming, did you? She said we were in New York and we were in some restaurant near the Chinese dim sum restaurants. And you know when you get those massive round revolving tables that turn around so that when you're at a big dinner, you can all get a bit of the dish? We're at one of them, you know, and it's turning around and the table flips up and we're with our friends in New York and we're the ones arguing and it's a bit awkward. So that's kind of where it comes from, sitting and arguing around an actual turning table.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. I think it's great, but she does say it's not as glamorous as it sounds to take it out of the context of the metaphor of tables turning and put it into the literal sitting around a revolving table. But either way, I still love it. I don't think it diminishes the song for me, even a little. This is a strong contender for my playlist pick.
Yeah?
Yeah. It, I guess, all totally depends on what you pick, if I can stand to leave whatever you don't take off the playlist. But Turning Tables was the surprise song of the album for me, just in terms of like what I expected from it versus what it gave me. There were a lot of other songs on here that were great, but Turning Tables was just a cut above.
It's pretty good.
What do you think about Don't You Remember? This is one of the few songs that got the Rick Rubin treatment and was allowed to stay on the album. And I think it's a definite shift, Don't You Remember, as she kind of takes all the emotions that she was projecting outward at the people who hurt her and the world around her, and she starts to turn them inward towards herself a little more. And in fact, actually, she added Don't You Remember specifically because she felt like she was piling it on a little too strong with all the negative songs about her ex. This was deliberately put right here to break the pattern as a more positive, uplifting kind of moment. She flashes this back to the beginning of this relationship before things went sour, and she implores her ex to remember all the good times instead of all the bad. She said, you know when you forget why you love someone? I was just thinking about how my entire body would just shiver if my ex touched me to say hello. It's sad when you can't remember why you loved someone. And that's kind of the plea that Don't You Remember makes. It's a lot. I mean, despite it being a more positive song, it is not a happy song.
No.
In fact, it's kind of one of the saddest, most melancholy to this point.
I mean, she just hasn't missed yet.
I don't know. Not missed. I won't say missed, but Don't You Remember is...
I think it's the weakest of the four so far, and I mean, I think that shows in the plays. But there's just something about the way she belts out the Don't You Remember chorus.
Yeah.
The ballad guy in me really enjoys it.
Sure. Actually, apparently, this was one of the most difficult or challenging songs for her to record.
Really?
Yeah, I think maybe that's because of the rhythms of it and stuff. I don't like the production on this one. I don't think the instruments, this is kind of a you-ish comment based on some things you said in the past, but I don't think the instruments support her belting enough on this one.
Fair enough.
Not for most of the song. Maybe by the last time through the chorus, but...
No, I'd agree. I think the last time through is good, but you're right. The first time through is a bit rough.
It feels flat and flimsy and thin.
I'll give you that.
I want more of the orchestration that comes in later. The first 3 minutes of the song kind of sound like it could be played by any band in a club. You know what I mean? It doesn't have the grandiose, like, full style to the first three tracks. Don't You Remember might be one of my bottom three or four songs on the album. And that's not lyrically. Got nothing to do with lyrics. Fully production on that. That's pretty much what I've got to say about Don't You Remember. Yes, I remember.
What about, I mean, the next giant hit, Set Fire to the Rain?
Huge hit. One of the biggies. If Rolling in the Deep is Adele's biggest song, Set Fire to the Rain is... Someone Like You is also probably the biggest. So this is like the third biggest. Honestly, we could just debate all day. Who even knows?
Yeah, I would say Set Fire to the Rain, Rolling in the Deep, Someone Like You... I mean, she has so many. I mean, Hello also is big. I know this one's not on here, but if you're talking about like her biggest hits, like Hello was super popular too.
Not as big as these though. Yeah, it was super popular and it got memed everywhere.
It got memed everywhere, I think really helped it, but it was still really popular.
But I just Set Fire to the Rain. If you knew nothing about Adele and had not heard anything but what you've heard to this point on the album before, Set Fire to the Rain starts, and I think within like 5 seconds, you know it's going to be one of the best songs. You can just tell, can't you?
Yeah, there's an energy to it.
Yeah, it's got a way bigger sound and way bigger energy than the rest of the tracks to this point. I think it just hits you like a punch in the jaw. It was actually her third straight number one for the record, and it was her last number one for a few years, up until, like you just mentioned, Hello. It was certified 4 times platinum by July of 2012. Like, Turning Tables went gold in January. This one, like, outsold it 5 times that by July. It was a huge hit. This song is producer Fraser Smith's take on Phil Spector's infamous Wall of Sound style. So, Set Fire to the Rain has a lot of reverb, not really clutter to it, but not a lot of empty space in the sound. You know, it's loud, it's assertive, it's in your face. The title is actually a reference to James Taylor's song, Fire and Rain. She said it's just about the contradictions that are in relationships, really. One person says this, the other person says that. I was really, really heartbroken when I met who the song is about, and he kind of brought me back to life and put me back together, and he was a jerk. She said he was a jerk, too. Set Fire to the Rain, I think, has one of the best pre-choruses on the album.
Yeah, it's a good pre-chorus.
I also like the way they kind of distort her vocal a little bit. It's not clean. It's not as smooth as it is on some of the other tracks. It's got a little grit and edge.
There's a, I don't know what it's in, pop culture thing. Hang on, let me see if I can find it real fast before I quote it wrong.
Was it that shelved remake of Titanic?
What am I thinking of? What is it? I guess I'll describe it to you. Maybe this will be an Otis Elevators thing.
Maybe I'll know it.
There is some pop culture thing where, like, somebody has a gun.
Okay.
Okay, so they're, like, walking up to this place. It's raining.
Gun, walking.
Yeah, he, like, walks up to a door. It's raining. He's getting rained on. He, like, goes inside. And then he, like, tries to kill somebody by firing a gun. But when he fires the gun, he bursts into flames and, like, dies.
I've never heard of that.
I believe. It's something like that. Something like that. And, like, it's the mystery is, like, how the heck did they do that? And the answer is that, like, they, like, faked the rain. It was, like, a hit or something. And, like, it wasn't actually rain. It was gasoline or some sort of, like, probably not gasoline because gasoline smells. But it was, like, some sort of flammable liquid that was being thrown on him outside, so that then when he, like, lit, or maybe he didn't fire a gun, maybe it was some sort of hit where somebody died because the whole setup was that they faked it raining outside to cover him in some sort of flammable liquid. And I don't remember what it is, but I always go to that thought of, like, a spout over a door to make somebody think it's raining when really it's not.
Okay.
This is not a good episode for me remembering things. I can't remember where I've heard Adele do a vocal run I didn't like. Can't remember this story.
No, I guess not. I don't know about all that. But yeah, think about how much it would suck if the rain was fire. We'd have to, like, reconfigure society.
Yeah.
Farming couldn't happen. We'd have to live underground. So I guess the point is, Adele, please don't set fire to the rain. We need it.
There's no way I've made this up. I see it so clearly in my mind, but yet so not clearly.
Weird. I don't know. It'll be a mystery. Hey, audience, if you know what the heck that is, let us know.
Yeah, let us know, please. Confirm I'm not crazy.
Or vice versa. What do you think about He Won't Go? I can't say the title without hearing it in little split up increments like that. He won't go. It's just in my head that way. Another track I had no idea of before I put on this album. And actually not even a love song at all. It's a tribute song to a friend who was struggling, or who had struggled in the past, with a heroin addiction. At the time of the record's release, though, she said he'd been actually clean for over a year. So that's encouraging. He Won't Go comes with a nice story behind it. It's another song that's really carried by percussion and piano, like rumor has it was for a long time in there. But the piano's a lot higher instead of the bass line playing. And I like that a lot.
I like the instruments on this one a lot.
I think some of the best for a lower non-hundreds of millions of plays song.
Bump. Bump, bump.
Yeah, I like the punchiness of it.
I just like how, like, we just came from Set Fire to the Rain, which is this huge song, right? But yet this one still has a lot of power to it, too, and it's so much more subdued.
Yeah.
It's interesting how she's able to do that.
It's maybe the back-to-back with the biggest contrast on the whole record. And they do both, I think, land well in their own ways.
Yeah.
I'm looking in the back half of the record. We're not there yet, but the back half of the record has a lot of longer songs.
It does.
I guess we'll see how we felt about that in a bit. But He Won't Go, it doesn't feel long, despite being one of the longest tracks on the album at 4:38. It's definitely the longest track we've had to this point, and it doesn't show.
It doesn't.
What do you think about Take It All? Pure piano ballad. Take It All was actually written prior to the breakup, making it one of the album's first tracks. I think it's an excellent piano ballad for this point in the album.
It is a great time for it.
Like, He Won't Go has so much attitude. I think it's really nice to land in this emotion soup next. You know, steepen it for a little bit. It is the same sentiment we've seen in other places, though. You know, she's still got feelings, even though she's been hurt, and he doesn't feel the same way. It's not reciprocated. So she says, just go and take it all when you do. I think of all the background vocal parts, this is maybe a hot take. I think Take It All maybe has the worst. Let me put it this way. I think they contribute the least to this song.
I'd be willing to agree with that, sure.
I think all the other places we've heard background vocals so far, they take the song to another level. Whereas Take It All kind of feels like it's on a good level without them. And they come in and it's a little much.
I could agree with that, yeah.
Okay.
Take It All is probably my least favorite track so far.
Really? I'd still give it to Don't You Remember.
No, I like Don't You Remember.
No, don't you remember how much you hated it?
Nope.
Okay, well, I'll be waiting until you do. Why is it so easy for this album to play that game? Every one of these titles could be used in conversation.
Yeah, that's funny.
Anyway, I'll Be Waiting is up next. It's kind of a bit of a reversal of the album's narrative so far. It's about a relationship that's ended, of course, as the rest of them have been, but this time it's the speaker's fault, and she's realizing that. So all she can do is wait and hope that her ex comes back, and when he does, she'll be waiting. Definitely a different flavor for this album. It's actually drawn some comparison to the likes of Aretha Franklin.
Huh.
I like it. It's nice to get back into the upbeat of things after we've almost forgotten it after a couple songs here.
I think I'll Be Waiting has the least staying power in my memory other than the chorus. Like, the chorus I can sing, like, I'll be waiting for you.
Yes. Yeah, the verses get lost very quick.
But, like, the rest of the song, for most of these songs, like, I can tell you, like, the verses and the chorus. For this one, I can only give you the chorus.
I agree. But it's such a good chorus.
It is.
Plus, I think there's some really awesome lyrics in the verses, even if the melody doesn't stick around as much. Forgive me for my sins. I swam in dirty waters, but you pushed me in. I've seen your face under every sky, but now the sky is cleared and it's blue, and I see my future in you. Come on, there's good stuff in there. Build your walls around me and pull me to the light. I think it's lyrically a sneakily strong track, but according to the precious Spotify plays, it is the least popular on the album by a good bit. 20 million streams? Wow, that much. But it's got horns in it. You like horns?
I do. I'm a big fan of horns.
Maybe that's what makes it too much of an outlier.
The horns are great.
I think it's a song that I don't seek out, but I'm never going to complain about it when it's on. That's my take on I'll Be Waiting. So One and Only is the next track. And do you know the one and only person we've been talking about for the rest of this album? You know, the ex and the big breakup and stuff.
Yeah.
One and Only, in the most ironic twist of twists, is not about that person. One and Only is about someone else. It's about a close friend, apparently, that she had feelings for at one point. Kind of about a crush. Refreshing, actually, to have a change of subject. She said, it's another happy song. It's about someone that I've known for years and we've always really liked each other and never been together, even though I'm pretty convinced I'm going to marry this guy in the end. One of those kind of friends.
One of those kinds.
Yeah. I think the back part of this album maybe is its weakest, which is kind of by necessity because the first part is so strong, right? Mm. It's just hit, 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 hit. And then the back of the album, we get these songs with like less staying power. You don't remember the chorus as much. You know what I mean? It's like a little bit worse and a little bit worse, but it's not bad. It's just not as unbelievable as the beginning of the album. And I think because the beginning is so incredible, it kind of eclipses the back half in a lot of ways. Not every, there are exceptions, but definitely true for I'll Be Waiting and One and Only, and even Love Song up next when we get there. But yeah, One and Only is another one I think that kind of suffers from the Don't You Remember bit, where it sounds a little bit flatter than I want it to. I want it to be more robust, a fuller sound, and I don't feel like it gets there. She sings the crap out of it, but I wish the instruments were there to back her up really properly.
One and Only, yeah, we're kind of in the rough stretch of the album for me. Not that it's that rough compared to other albums, but I think Take It All, I'll Be Waiting, One and Only is the roughest set of three for me.
Yeah, every album's got a stretch like that, I think. Most do. So It happens. Love Song, the next to last track on the album, and its second longest track, actually, One and Only was the longest, which is maybe sad, and maybe part of why I feel like it's so long. So much of like a stall out point for the album. It's just because it's almost 6 minutes long. But Love Song is the one and only cover on the album. It's a cover of the song by The Cure. She dedicated this song to her mother, her friends, and her support system in general when she was so far away from home recording 21 across the pond in California. That's like, honestly, so far from England, because it's across the pond and then also across the entire country to the other pond. She said, "My first concert ever was The Cure at Finsbury Park, and my mom took me. It's such a touching song, and it's all one take, and it's very raw, and I'm really sad in it because I'm missing home. The whole experience of being in Malibu with Rick Rubin was a bit overwhelming, not in a sad way, but I just felt quite heavy, sort of, you know, by it all." She said, "Love Song sort of set me free a little bit." She said, "The sounds, everything about it is just amazing." And she actually was losing her voice a little bit when she recorded it. She said that it actually suits the record really well, she thinks, that her voice is kind of going out. It doesn't show, but yeah, I like it.
Sure.
Rick Rubin actually already kind of flagged the song and made up a demo in this bossa nova style with the intent to give it to Barbara Streisand. But that didn't really pan out, and he knew that Adele liked The Cure, and he knew it would be a good fit for this project and what she was looking for, so he brought it to Adele. And he said that when he took it to Adele, she must have sung it, quote, 30 times in a row. He said it was astounding each time, because to do it all in one take, a five-minute song in one take 30 times in a row, it's so long. That's hours. That's a feature film of takes.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do anything that long.
You don't think you could do anything for 2.5 or 3 hours?
Straight like that?
How long do you think we record some of these episodes?
Yeah, but I'm not like talking straight through the whole thing, right? You do a little, no. I do a little. You do a little, I do a little.
Yeah, there's give and take. It's not just Adele.
I'm just trying to think of anything that I continuously do for that period of time. Ooh. Other than like breathing.
I was going to say sleep, but if you're excluding things like that.
But even that's hard to do.
It is hard to do. Well, last but not least, I guess I misspoke earlier. I'm going to fully own it. When I said Rolling in the Deep was Adele's biggest song, I just forgot about Someone Like You because I was so excited about Rolling in the Deep.
Yeah, I can't believe you forgot about Someone Like You.
Someone Like You is Adele's biggest song, and it's not close. It's a little close, but it's not close. And it's the last song on 21. Talk about, I mean, putting your best foot forward with Rolling in the Deep and going out with a bang with Someone Like You. I don't think we've ever talked about a record with such good startings and endings. Like, together? I can't name one off the top of my head.
Me neither.
It's so wild. It's just another of those big three, if I can limit it to three off this album. But yeah, no, I think three is kind of fair because with Someone Like You, Adele was the first woman from the UK to have three Billboard Top 10 songs come from the same album simultaneously.
Yeah.
So that's cool. It was her first number one in the UK and her second number one in the US. Allegedly, as of 2015, it was the third most downloaded single of all time in the UK.
That's nuts.
I know. And it was also the first ever recipient of the Best Pop Solo Performance Grammy in 2012. And what a way to kick off the category. Jeez. It's another perfect piano ballad. No complaints at all. Not even nitpicky. Someone Like You is incredible. Actually, fun fact too, this is the first ever, quote, pure piano ballad to top the Billboard Hot 100. So ballad guy.
Yeah.
You are legally obliged to love it.
Oh, I do. You don't have to force me at all.
No? Good.
I love it. I'll tell you right now, it's probably my playlist pick.
What am I going to do? Complain? Yeah, I kind of figured it would be, and I don't disagree.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, it's definitely one of those big three.
Right.
Pretty certain it's this one.
She said that Someone Like You was basically the final summation of her feelings about her ex by the time she finished with the record. So it's kind of a capstone of all that catharsis and reflection and emotion, everything we've talked about through the last 10 tracks, kind of distilled down into this one song. Literally, the lyrics describe her feelings when she learns about the life her ex has built since their relationship ended. And actually, she said, get this, Someone Like You, the pure piano ballad, she said it was the first song I wrote meant to be on guitar. And I got about halfway through with it, and I gave up because it was really hurting me while I was writing it.
Oof.
I can't imagine this song on a guitar. I guess I can, but not for that to be the main version that exists.
Yeah.
She said, "I met the love of my life, and I'll never find anyone like him again, but we just weren't right for each other then, and I think we just destroyed it too much to ever be able to go back to it again in the future." And it was me sort of imagining being a spinster and being single forever and going to look for him, and he's married with kids and stuff like that. And, oh, it's just such a good song. You know, she made James Bond cry, right?
Yeah.
She also made Adele cry. She said, when she repeats the chorus at the end, she said, "The first chorus of the last chorus, I'm actually crying in it, which makes me feel really a bit ugh, but it's really, really, really beautiful. I don't think I'll ever write a nice or a better song. I think that might be my song." She's actually crying in the recording.
And I'm pretty certain, if I remember right, I think it's this song that since writing this song, she has come out, like, as she's grown, you know, gone from 21 to 30.
Yeah.
A lot's changed in her life, and she now sings this song from a different place.
Oh, yeah? Like, emotionally? Or, like, on the stage?
Yeah, emotionally.
Now she stands on stage, right?
Yeah, emotionally. Since finding someone that, you know, can fill that hole, you know, this was right after a big breakup and all that jazz, you know, I'm pretty certain I remember seeing, like, a live performance of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Where she talked about how she's, you know, this song comes from a different place in her heart now than when she originally wrote it.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. There's probably a lot less underlying bitterness and spite. You know, "I wish nothing but the best for you" probably feels a lot more genuine nowadays, a dozen years onward, than it did in the immediate settling of the dust. What do you think? Are you ready to final spin? How do we final spin after a song like that? I just want to cry.
Yeah. I also found the live DVD that we had.
You found it? That's exciting.
I mean, like, not in my apartment, but like...
No. Well, you have 99 Dalmatian toys in your apartment. Who knows?
Adele live at the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, should we watch it? We should find a way. That'd be fun.
I don't know if it's on any streaming services or not, but you can buy it on Amazon for $15.02.
Oh.
On a DVD or in multi-format for $19.80.
Multi-format? That's cool. I want it on film.
Oh, Blu-ray.
Oh, favorite color is green. I want the green way.
But yeah, there's been a lot of famous albums recorded live at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yes, it's a very famous venue. Let's get into final spin. I am not so in suspense about you this time, I think. Before the episode started, you got mad at me for picking this album because you're like, I kind of wanted to pick this one. You wanted to steal it from me.
Yeah, I mean, this is an album that I knew before you did and like grew up listening to. Like, this would have been a great Connor pick.
Yeah, I know.
And then here you are discovering it a couple months ago and then smacking it on into an episode.
Well, I wanted to talk about it because my scores for this album are really something. First up, music. Music's a 92. I think all these songs have their memorable moments. Yes, some verses get lost, but really there's something to love in each of them. They're all unique and all really, really good. Some of the best pop songs to come out of the last decade, out of the last 15 years on this record. So come on. 92 for music. Lyrics, I'm giving an 88. I love a good heartbreak album. Love a good breakup album. I think, honestly, I mean, I know she feels like she's matured a lot since then, and I'm sure she has, but this is such a mature perspective for someone who's 21 writing these songs and going through this. I feel like, what a perspective. She does a great job at conveying all that in the lyrics. I'm giving them an 88. Instruments production, 90. Easy album to listen to. There's a couple moments where it's a little flat. One and only, Don't You Remember. You know the times. But for the most part, I think it's got a nice full sound. I think her voice is great all the time. There's enough consistency in the instruments to keep it grounded with pianos and occasional guitars, but especially percussion. And then there's enough variation in the instruments to keep it interesting, like some of the distortion that they use or the horns on I'll Be Waiting in a couple other places. You know, it's really great. 90 instruments of production. Overall vibe, 94. What a record. That puts its overall score for me at a 92.0, ranking this album at an astounding number 53 on my ranking list.
See, if I'd picked it, I would have finally cracked your top 100.
It's true, but you didn't, because I picked it. Yeah, it is just below Florence and the Machine, episode 130, and just above American Idiot, back from episode 51. I felt like it'd be a very Year of Healing pick, because I knew it'd be the exact kind of thing you'd like, and I like it a lot, too.
Try to sell me that way.
Do I have to sell you? Did Adele not already sell you?
No, I'm not buying your, I did this for you, BS.
It's the Year of Healing.
If anything, this is a sign of aggression that you've stolen an album from my childhood. You're setting the tone for what the next, we're coming up on the end of the Year of Healing. You're trying to set a tone for what next year's going to be. I see how it is.
Hear me out. I put this on the schedule long before I ever knew you had any personal connection to it, or even to Adele. It was just a good guess that you would like it. I didn't know that you were that into it. Otherwise, I might not have. I mean, typically when you pick albums, you don't tend to go for anything that you think is going to score less than a 9. That's been your rule of thumb.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. That'd be a waste of a pick.
This is not a waste of a pick. I pick a lot of things that don't score that equivalent for me.
Well, that's because you get 50-some picks every year. I get 3.
Okay, touche. I have a lot more opportunities to pick things.
So, yeah, so I think it's no surprise that this one's getting 9 Tony Awards out of 10.
Stop. But Adele doesn't have any Tonys.
Getting her that CGOT.
Well, I guess it's kind of a CGOT. If she gets a Spinnet Award and she gets, but it's a Tony Award unit, not a Tony Award.
So there's an asterisk on the CGOT membership status.
Sure.
It's a lonely club of one right now.
Yeah, that's true. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber and Adele floating on a door in the middle of the ocean.
My top 3 in album order. Rolling in the Deep.
Rolling in the Deep. You could have had it all.
Yeah. Rumor has it. Ooh. Rumor has it.
Yeah, it does.
Carnival Mention. Turning Tables.
Yeah.
Set Fire to the Rain.
Yeah, you've picked 4 out of the first 5. I get the feeling we're about to.
And Someone Like You.
Yeah.
I could have maybe taken more, but I looked ahead at the schedule. Can't afford to lose more than 1 right now.
Yeah. That's true. I'm not surprised that you had to go over on your picks this time. 5 top 3s on an album like this. I'm honestly shocked you can stop yourself even still.
I mean, if it was anything short of a me pick, I think I wouldn't have been able to stop myself. But with a me pick coming up, gotta have my picks for my own picks.
That's right. Picks for picks.
As for playlist selection, I think I'm going to go with Someone Like You.
You're sticking with it? Someone Like You.
I think so. What are you thinking?
It's such a hard call. I don't think I can make a wrong pick, but I don't think I can make a right pick. I think it's Turning Tables.
You're going to go with Turning Tables. Wow. Bypassing the other 2 big 3.
The song genuinely stunned me when I heard it for the first time.
Wow.
And it's what I remember the most fondly about this album listening experience.
Fair enough.
Because I didn't know it very well, and it instantly became a favorite. All the others, I already knew or had experience with. Turning Tables was a surprise.
I wouldn't have picked it over Rolling in the Deep or Set Fire to the Rain, but,
Well, it's the Spin It Favorite Songs playlist. You've got yours, I've got mine.
Yeah, if it's your favorite song, it's your favorite song.
Now, where in your 9s does this go? How high of a pick would this have been for you?
Yes.
How high did I score, quote unquote, stealing a pick?
I'll be honest, it was kind of ridiculous. I made it 5 tracks deep going, is this going to be my new, top of the 9s?
Wow. Oh, wow. That's...
And at one point, I even had the flicker of a thought of, am I gonna have to give a 10? I couldn't remember what was to come. I was going, if it doesn't slow down at all, I don't know how I can justify not at least putting it at the top of the 9s.
She better settle down.
Then we hit a little bit of the road bump there, and the He Won't Go, Take It All, I'll Be Waiting. That settled me into a comfortable place right below the Queen Dua Lipa.
Wow. Oh, so whereas this one landed right below Florence and the Machine for me, it's right above Florence and the Machine for you.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What happens if you cut out those 3 tracks?
I mean, she's battling with the Billy Joels and Elton Johns of the world if you take those 3 tracks out.
Yeah.
The Stranger in Yellow Brick Road probably still beat it out unless you take out 1 or 2 more. I would say this is another great example of the Michael Jackson Thriller effect of trying to go for all hits.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Even if that wasn't her intent behind it, it almost accomplishes that.
Yeah.
It is powerhouse after powerhouse after powerhouse.
Truly, it is.
So if you remove some of those weaker tracks, it's battling with giants.
Sure. Well, what Spinnet Award are we going to give her then? Should we give her the Jack and the Beanstalk Award for battling with giants?
I do like that idea. The Spinnet Golden Goose Award.
That's pretty niche, I guess. Well, that's going to do it, I think, for this episode of Spinnet, the record ranking podcast for you and all other people who would rather be listening to music.
But mainly you. You right now.
Specifically.
Keith.
Oh, yeah, but everyone else too.
Yeah, but imagine if somebody named Keith is listening to this right now. They just got singled out. Their mind's blown.
Yeah, it's true. Well, yeah, tell a friend named Keith about the podcast. Tell a friend who wants to set fire to the rain about all that, and we'll be waiting. If you're looking for more Spinnet content, or you want to tell us what the heck that weird commercial Connor remembers is, you can listen right here, Keith, right where you're at. You can also find us on social media. At Spinnet Pod on X, at Spinnet Pod Official on Instagram, and on the web at www.spinnetpod.com.
Post some cool stuff.
We got bonus content. We got unbonus content. The works.
Bonus content.
See you next week for an album where Connor doesn't get all his top threes.
Oh, man.
Tune in to hear him say fun phrases like this.
Life is a bowl of soup, and I'm a fork.
Wasn't that fun? See you next week. And keep
spinning.
Hey. What's my mixtaper reward?
I'm scared to know what he's going to concoct.
Yeah, I am too. Does he have it finished yet? I'm kind of curious.
I'm not allowed in the untrue.
Oh, so I just don't get to know? I thought it was going to be good at the end of the episode to tell everybody, but I guess we don't know.
Yeah, I think coming up on the end of the year of healing, it seems like a gift-giving season.
Oh, no.